Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Today's episode of the Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors. When it's time to get new windows or a new door, you got to go with Pella. Why? Because they can provide window and door solutions to literally any home. And because the people are great. Steve, Vince, Clint, Brian, the whole gang, everybody's a stud. And you know what? You're going to be working with Pella the entire time. Do you realize that when you work with some other window companies, all of a sudden questions pop up like who's doing this, who's installing that, who's pre-finishing that? And before you know it, you're working with like four or five different people. Disaster! You want the convenience and simplicity of working with one company, not three or four. That's what you get with Pella. Check them out on the web, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. On the pod today, Creighton basketball is doing, really Creighton Athletics, I should say, is doing this whole off-season thing that they've teamed up with maybe First National Bank, and they are doing coach, player, teammate, different things where they are interviewing each other or having a conversation where they're getting questions from listeners and all that. I think Marcus Zagorowski and Greg McDermott did one. It was fantastic. But I was able to sit down, social distancing style. Rass and I were like a long ways away from each other. But I was able to sit down with Rass, Bruce Rasmussen, Creighton Athletic Director. And Rass and I went for an hour. And we talked about a bunch of different things. We talked, first of all, picked his brain about, you know, what it's like to be an athletic director during a pandemic like this and all the decisions that are being thrown at him right now, what it's like for the student athletes, in particular at Creighton. And then we just went down memory lane with Creighton basketball. Talked about Doug McDermott and Grant Gibbs and Dana Altman and everything in between, man. We went an hour on a variety of things. This was a blast. There isn't a guy I love more than Bruce Rasmussen. He's the best athletic director in the country, and he is a guy that I love talking to him, man. He's got so much knowledge. He's got so many interesting thoughts and opinions on things, and this guy's been a coach. He's been an athletic director for a long time. He's a wizard at hiring coaches and hiring people. I always think that's a window into people that really have a great grasp on life and people. From Coach Booth to Dana to Greg McDermott to Ed Service to all, like Johnny Torres to all, like he has done a really good job, Jim Flannery, hiring coaches. He's been the chair of the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. So this guy's like, he's a great resource to lean on. So this was a ton of fun. I think you guys are going to enjoy this. It's just me and Rass chopping it up for an hour on a variety of topics. So let's get to it. Here is my sit-down one-on-one long-form podcast chat with Bruce Rasmussen. He's Bruce Rasmussen. I'm Nick Botts, the off-season, and Rass. A lot of people are sitting at home and watching Netflix and doing nothing right now. I'd have to imagine you can't necessarily just totally shut off because you probably got a million things going on right now.
My job has changed dramatically in the last couple of weeks as a result of COVID-19. A big part of my job is reaching out and really touching other people, and not necessarily physically. There are a lot of different ways to touch. But, you know, you talk about our student athletes, our coaches, our season ticket holders, our corporate sponsors, our donors, people on campus. And you have to change completely the direction in terms of what you are doing. So, first of all, we've made sure that we communicate with our student athletes. And communication is speaking and listening. And what I've found, whether it's with our athletes or whether it's with our donors or people that you know, that they want to know what's going on at Creighton, but they also want you to listen to what they're going through on their end.
Right.
And so the communication has changed. I think there's a lot more verbal communication, but with our athletes, you know, it's when you think, I mean, when you are an athlete, you're wired to every day get up and say, what am I doing today to be better than I was yesterday? And your focus is on your sport. Your focus is obviously has to be on academics, has to be on physical and mental well-being. But all of a sudden, you're asked as athletes to switch directions. And so we're concerned about them. We want them to know that we care about them, that it's an unprecedented thing in their lives. But that we care about their physical well-being. We care about how are they doing academically. Academics is so much different.
Sure.
You know, one of the reasons that I've always felt Creighton had a great academic environment because there was a personal nature to the academics. Your class sizes were small. You had a relationship with your professor. You had more dialogue back and forth because you didn't have 600 people in a lecture hall. So there was a lot more interaction. And I thought that's what set us apart, the personal nature of the academics. All of a sudden, that's completely changed because now everything's online. How do your players adjust to that?
Right.
Where with a lot of our players, we had over on a daily basis academically. Now, how are they adjusting to being online, to being away from campus? So that's a concern of ours. Their mental health.
Right.
You know, how are they doing mentally? How are they adjusting to this? You know, you're a member of a team. It's a family. It's close. You have great relationships. All of a sudden, you don't see those people every day.
Right.
And so that's something that they've got to adjust to. So
I've thought a lot about what it would have been like if I was still playing. And people got to realize that a lot of these athletes, they have their whole day and week structured. Mm-hmm. You got class here, you got weights here, you're going to eat at this time, you're going to practice at this time. And all of a sudden, structure gets thrown out the window. Yep. And then, like you said, you're addicted to, like, I don't know how you're keeping a guy like Mitch Ballack out of the gym.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to get in and shoot. That's got to be really, really challenging. Have you been able to talk to any of the players on how they're kind of dealing with it?
Well, Mitch is still, it's a good example, Mitch is still in town. And he comes into the gym. You can come into the gym on your own. Mitch is in every morning.
And surprised.
You say it is an addiction.
It's totally an addiction.
But it's a difficult situation for them because a lot of our athletes don't have a place to go.
Right.
Wherever they are, fitness centers are closed, high schools are closed. You know, if you don't have an outdoor court somewhere, if you're basketball, but what do you do with baseball or what do you do with soccer and so forth? So it's a difficult adjustment for our athletes. And yes, we've had a lot of conversations with them, but it also causes them to stop and really look at your perspectives too. You're not just a soccer player. You're not just a baseball player or a basketball player. So what else do you do now? Can you do where you're taking less time, you have less structure? Can you reach out to your friends more? Can you interact with your family more? Do you appreciate what you had more instead of, I have to go to weights, I have to go to class, I have to go to practice? You appreciate the value of those things.
You're so right. All the things that everybody sits when they're super busy and they go, God, I just wish I could go home and do nothing.
Yep.
I wish I could just have a day where I could just watch Netflix all day and lay on the couch. Well, you find out a couple days of that and you're starting to kind of itch to get back into it. We did get a question from Dave that I do want to ask you. And the answer probably is, I don't know. But based on some of your conversations with other university presidents, athletic directors, when you try to look to the fall and think about sports and how all this stuff's going to work, I guess, what have those conversations been like? Because this thing changes almost every day.
Yeah. Well, first of all, your point about it changing, how fluid it is, think back to 4 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, even a week ago. So you can spend too much time projecting out a month or 2 months or 3 months or 6 months. You have to do it. But there has to be a balance, and you have to also worry about the now. What are we doing right now? What are we doing for the next 2 or 3 weeks? Because if we spend a lot of time worrying about what's going to happen in August and September and October, then we're going to lose out on the opportunities that we have right now.
And right.
We also lose out a little bit on the appreciation of what we've accomplished. You know, people spend time saying, well, what if we'd have had the men's basketball tournament? What if we'd have been able to, be a two seed and play in St. Louis or whatever? You lose the focus of, wasn't what we accomplished this year tremendous?
Yeah.
But athletic directors, presidents are looking down the road, which we have to. And what we find in athletics is, first of all, no matter what our goals are, no matter what our vision is, either as an individual athlete or as a team or as an athletic department, we can't get anywhere near where we need to get without a number of people going beyond their jobs and families and making a commitment to us. Where are our revenue streams? Okay, season tickets. Okay, that's a family. That's not a necessary expense. So you've got families that maybe aren't working. You've got families that whatever they had in the bank account's worth a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they have to make difficult decisions on where they're going to spend their money. When you can watch our games, if they occur, you can watch them on TV. Will they make the expense of buying tickets? What about our JBAC organization, which we get about $15 million. We have a $30 million a year budget. $15 million of it comes in donations
right.
a year. Can those people make a similar commitment? And what do we have to do if they don't? What about corporate sponsorships? What about NCAA revenue? What about Big East revenue? Athletic directors have to look at all those things and say, okay, we can't spend a lot of time on this, but we can't be ignorant either and say, we're just not going to deal with it.
Yeah.
And so we're spending a lot of time on strategic planning and what ifs. And hopefully we look back a month from now or 2 months from now and say, you know, this was a blip. We grew as a result of it. We have a better idea of where sports fits in society, where sports fits in our lives. We have a better idea of what's most important. And let's not let the things that are least important get in the way of things that are most important. But we're having all those discussions, and it's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your reaction to the decision for the spring athletes being able to keep a year of eligibility and what went into that?
Well, first of all, I think it was unnecessary. I think I would have been extremely disappointed if they would have said no.
Right.
Because as a former athlete, especially for those seniors, it's your last year, it's your last chance. For a lot of our athletes, it's their last chance to compete. They're not going on to play professionally. So to take that away from them was difficult. To give them an opportunity to come back is a humane thing to do. It's the right thing to do. It causes some additional expense for us, but our priority should be, first of all, our student athletes,
right.
student athletes and student athlete welfare. So we'll figure out a way.
Right. One thing I was thinking about, and I'm just, you know, since I'm always immersed in the men's basketball program, in some ways, it's a blessing for this recruiting period that Creighton's got a lot of guys coming back, that they don't have five, six scholarships to fill, because that'd be really hard, because now you're seeing I read something about a virtual visit, where you're basically having to, like, FaceTime guys around campus, but the coaches are still having to recruit. What's that world looking like, trying to recruit when people can't come and set foot on campus?
Well, as you know, I've always said this about recruiting. Recruiting's like shaving. Any day you don't do it, you look like a bum.
Like me. Like me. But it's okay right now.
Or
right?
me. I didn't shave today either. But you have different buckets.
Right.
So you have a graduate transfer bucket. Okay, graduate transfers look at us, and they'd look at it and say, boy, here's a great opportunity for us to maybe be a top 10 team all year and really do great things in the NCAA tournament next year. But they also look at playing time. They're going, wait a minute. Okay, what about undergraduate transfers? There's There's a proposed legislation that one-time transfers can transfer one time and be eligible immediately. That's been delayed. So you don't know whether that's going to be the case or not the case. And depending upon your situation as a coaching staff, you take one side or the other. So if you want kids and need kids to be eligible immediately, yeah. you're saying, hey, no matter what, if you transfer, you'll be able to play immediately.
Sure.
And if you're a program that needs kids to sit out for a year and develop because you have a lot coming back, you're telling them, oh, no,
right.
you're not going to be able to transfer. You're going to have to sit out a year, and, boy, it'd be great to come to our place.
Right.
So you have that bucket, okay? You still have some high school kids that are unsigned. You have that bucket. And then you've got, classes of 21, 22, 23 that you're recruiting. So there are a number of different buckets, and it's forced our coaches to really – focus more on the next year where we lose a lot of seniors.
That's
after
right.
next year. So, and then it's awkward because a lot of the conversations, you want them to be personal. Either they come onto your campus officially or unofficially, or you go and meet with them, where there's so many voices in these kids' ears right now that you don't have control over.
Yeah. I was thinking about recruiting, and you and I have talked about this a little bit. Creighton's move to the Big East, in particular with basketball, there's no question that it's allowed Creighton to recruit a higher caliber of athlete.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you how many times when I was playing for Coach Altman, there were oftentimes I was the guy that hosted a lot of guys on the official visits.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to so many recruits, and they'd have a handful of maybe Missouri Valley offers, maybe a Horizon League offer, and then they had that one Big 12 offer, that one Big 10 offer.
Yep.
And so many times Creighton checked all the boxes, but they wanted to go play in that bigger, better league.
Yeah.
It does feel like the move to the Big East has allowed for that to get taken off the table. And so Creighton's starting to land Tyshawn Alexander, Marcus Zagorowski, Mitch Ballock. And it's huge.
And you've touched on two real key areas in recruiting. And one is you're wired as an athlete. And it isn't just men's basketball. You go across the board. You want to compete against the best. And you were right. It was frustrating when we were in the Valley because we had a good fan base. We had a great coaching staff. We developed players. We graduated players. We were successful. We were in the NCAA tournament every year. But a lot of athletes didn't choose to come to Creighton because they wanted to play against the best. They want to be in a league where you played against the best. The other part that we're finding is if we get kids and their families on campus, we have a much better chance of getting them because they see Omaha, and Omaha is different than their perception. They see Creighton and Creighton's campus and our facilities and our environment and our culture is different than what they expected. And so to be able to get kids on campus and now to be in the Big East and play in one of the better conferences gives us a much better chance to get a better caliber of athlete and still retain the culture that we thought was important to us.
Speaking of recruiting, one of the things, I'm not so sure the defining trait of Creighton basketball over the years hasn't been finding the diamonds in the rough that explode.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Kyle Korver, Nate Funk, Doug McDermott, Anthony Tolliver, the list goes on and on. That's kind of been the calling card for this program.
Yeah.
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I attribute it to two or three things. And I think, first of all, it's we have had, since I've been athletic director, coaching staffs that are great teachers of the game.
Yeah.
And so what great teachers do is you have a line which is your potential and a line which is your performance. And they narrow that gap as much as possible because their concern is you individually, you're not here to serve the coaches. The coaches are here to serve you.
Right.
And so in serving you, I'm going to try to get you to narrow that gap as much as possible. And I am more effective at that if I am a great teacher. So we've had not just head coaches. Dana Altman's a great teacher. Mac's a great teacher. But coaching staffs that were good at taking you and working on what you needed to work on. I think that is number one. Number two is Creighton has a way as a university of filtering out those people that aren't great learners.
Right.
Because you come on campus and you find out about the academic culture, the personal nature of the academics, and if you're not motivated to be a learner, you go somewhere else.
Yes.
And then I think third is the culture. And Josh Stotzler gave me a book a few months ago called The Goldmine Effect. And it really talked about areas of the world in which the athletic performances are much better than the population would indicate. So most of your great distance runners come from Kenya.
Yep.
You think Kenya's got millions of people, but those distance runners come from a very small area there. And I mean, you can take hockey, they took women's golf in South Korea and so forth. And their bottom line was this: it isn't the facilities, and it really isn't necessarily that you have freakish athletic ability. It's your attitude.
Yeah.
And we hire, and a good lesson for me is I hire a lot of times based on somebody's job description, on their talents and on their skills. Those that don't work out, it isn't they didn't have the talent.
Right.
It isn't they didn't have the skill. It's they didn't have the right attitude. Now you take that to athletics and you say, okay, we've had some freakish athletes that didn't really perform anywhere near what you thought they should. And we've had some people, Doug McDermott's a great example. We talk a lot about what Doug accomplished. We don't talk enough about why.
Yeah.
Why right. did he do what he did? Because his attitude was off the charts. Grant Gibbs, attitude off the charts. And so when we look at recruiting, that has to be a part of it. Not just how fast can you run, how high can you jump, how much can you bench press, you know, what your skills are,
sure.
what's your attitude.
Right.
And our coaches have done a nice job of recruiting to the culture and having kids who have that attitude of saying, I want to get better individually. I want to be a part of a team that gets better. And when you look at the Kyle Korvers, Anthony Tollivers, Doug McDermott's, you go right down the list, those kids that narrowed that gap as much as possible all had an attitude before they came here that was developed as a result of being here.
And the other thing, and I remember asking Doug this question, you bring up Tolliver, Korver, Doug, and we bring up those guys because they're in the NBA, they're very identifiable.
Right.
Their giant pictures are hanging in the yeah. practice facility. The importance of, another thing I would talk about is hope and inspiration that someone that sat in the same seats you're in achieved what you want to.
Yeah.
Like Doug said, Kyle doing what he did fueled him because it made him feel like, hey, it's possible.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing is like it's success breeds success
yeah.
too. So even the guys that come in, they got to be right here. But if that path is there, they're more apt to go on that path.
I think that's a great point. You have to have that example. You think you're working hard, then you got Ryan Sears,
yeah.
you got Johnny Klein, you yeah. got whomever, and you're going, okay.
Right.
There's a different level of going hard. But that brings up another point that we miss a lot, and it's more hidden. And it's a great example of where we are today in society. But the teams that I've seen at Creighton that I thought came the closest to narrowing that gap, to reaching their potential, had people not in the spotlight that determined the culture and the attitude of practice every day. Those kids that came to practice, they weren't receiving a scholarship.
Right.
They weren't going to be in the spotlight. They weren't going to be on the floor. They rarely got on the floor. And yet every day they came for the love of the game. And they work their tails off. And it's a good lesson for us. And Coach Altman and Coach McDermott are two that are great at that, making everybody on the team, recognizing the value of everybody on the team.
Right.
And really those kids that do the scout team, the scouting report, how many times in the locker room after a game do they talk about, hey, we won this game because these kids did a great job with the scouting report.
All the time.
And I think today we're seeing right now, there are people in the spotlight because of COVID-19, but think about the people not in the spotlight, the people that are going to the hospitals, that are going to work, that are exposing themselves every day and or working paycheck to paycheck. But the success of COVID, our our attack on COVID-19 will be dictated more by those, the faithfulness, the loyalty, the dedication of those not in the spotlight than those in the spotlight.
No doubt. As I was driving in to do this, I was thinking about just wanting to pick your brain on some Creighton basketball stuff. We've obviously talked about the stars.
Yeah.
Is there a guy over the course of 20, 25 years of Creighton basketball that you feel like was just is underrated, underappreciated? I'm sure there's a couple of guys that come to your mind. Is there a player or two that you were like, man, that guy doesn't – he's not in the first two or three names people talk about, but, man, these dudes were really, really good players.
Well, and a couple of these obviously have gotten a lot of credit, but Ryan Sears was always underappreciated.
Yeah.
I mean, from the time he came on campus and, you know, in the pickup games, you got five against five and you play to a certain number and then – whoever wins stays and somebody else goes out. Ryan Sears never sat out. If you put Ryan with four chairs,
he was going to win.
His team was going to win. But, I mean, I think back to the Danny Colters and Johnny Kleins and Mike Lindemans.
Yeah,
and
Lindy
even
was great.
Even when I first came to Creighton, Gary and Glenn McCracken, the McCracken twins under Tony Barone, were there every single day. And I think about those kids, you know, that really a lot of people never knew their name. They wouldn't have picked them out of a lineup, and yet they came to practice every day, and it was for the love of the game, and they made kids execute and practice.
Right.
We don't have the depth of talent. You know, you go to a North Carolina or Duke, they're second team, and if they got 15 kids, you know, 6 through 15 are pretty good. Okay, at a Creighton, a lot of times 10 through 15, you know, maybe are Division II, Division III type players, but their love of the game, their passion, their attitude towards the process is what sets them apart and what really helps those kids that are talented develop.
Right. Give me a moment when you maybe watched Greg McDermott at Wayne State or Northern Iowa, that the first time you went, that's a good coach. That guy's really good. And he, ADs always talk about, they got to have that list in their head of if a spot opens up, you're ready to go. Do you remember a time and maybe what was it about Greg McDermott that you immediately thought that guy's a pretty good coach right there?
Well, I watched him. I was aware of him when he was a player because he went to Northern Iowa. I was a Northern Iowa grad. And then I followed him. He was at Wayne State in Nebraska. And the people I knew in that area talked about the relationship that he had with his players. His players loved him. They were family. And everybody says, welcome to the family, you know. But not everybody lives it.
Yeah.
That's why 42% of the kids that enter Division I basketball as freshmen or somewhere else by their junior year.
Yeah.
Say, this isn't the guy that recruited me.
Sure.
This isn't what I thought. Well, but so I was taken aback by the comments from people in that part of the state that said, this guy, the players love playing for him. The people in the community love him. He's doing a great job with what they have. And then when he went to the Dakotas, and then I first recognized him when he was at Northern Iowa because he would adjust to the talent that he had, but he also would adjust to the talent that you had. So Kyle tells his story. We played Northern. Mac was coaching there. He face guarded Kyle the entire game. Now, we got beat by 30, but I think Kyle had like 5 or 6 points, and Kyle's going, dude, when are you going to quit doing this? We're beating you by 30.
Right.
But Mac, it was, I'm here to serve you.
Right.
And instead of you adjust to me, I'll take your strengths, I'll take your talents, and I will adjust what I do. So there were teams he had that played slow, that were very deliberate, that played like Virginia. There were teams that he had that played very quick. There were teams that pressed. There were teams that really didn't put pressure on you. It was based on your talent. But the other thing that I noticed about him that I think that we really miss today and this generation of kids, we say you play basketball, you play soccer, you play volleyball. There has to be an element of joy to the process. There has to be an element of fun because you can't develop to the level that you need to develop to be successful if you're just going to practice, If you're going to practice with the attitude,
I just want to get through this today. Yeah.
Yeah, let me get through
let
today.
Let me get to this. Yeah.
Let me get to the day off.
Yeah.
Whatever. You need to go to practice to find out what you need to work on. And so you need to be able to get in the gym on your own. And you need to have that enthusiasm. And our kids get in the gym on their own. They wouldn't do that if they didn't enjoy the process.
Right.
They wouldn't do that. They come to the offices. They wouldn't do that if they didn't like being around the coaching staff. And I think that's what's helped us in the development of players. But Mac is, I think, the best coach. And I had an opportunity when I was on the men's basketball committee to watch closed practices, both when I went to watch a team play and then in the tournament. You had to oversee the closed practices. And I have not seen a coach who does a better job of being demanding in practice, but still having that element of fun and of joy than Coach Mack.
Yeah. And that's a hard balance because
it is a hard
balance to be demanding, but also know that, hey, I got your back and I love you.
Yep.
That's a hard because some coaches can't do both,
yep.
you know, and they become too buddy buddy and they don't hold them accountable or vice versa. The thing that struck me when you were talking there is like one of the things I take away from that is you never know who's watching you.
Yeah.
You know, to Greg McDermott didn't know eventually his path would end up at Creighton, but it's important. It's just like in terms of like a lesson that you're always auditioning.
Yeah.
People are always watching. People are always observing how you're interacting, all those kinds of things. And so it's just important to always remember that.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, there were people that criticized me when we hired Mac. Well, the process went so fast. I mean, didn't you look at other people?
Yeah.
And my response, and there was a mistake in my response, but my response was he interviewed for the job for 19 years. I've been watching him for 19 years.
Yeah.
But then I introduced him as Doug.
Well, it happens.
And I'd like to welcome our new men's basketball coach, Doug McDermott.
We had the old Chicken Nick show. We had a lot of fun with that clip. We certainly didn't let that one go. But you were just foreshadowing that Doug would become the – one of the greatest and most decorated college basketball players of all time. What do you think it is with – because I've gotten to know Greg McDermott really well, being around him for 10 years now, and I've played for Dana Altman. They have some similarities, but they're different at the same time too, and yet they yield similar results.
Yeah.
What do you – give me your, like, hey, they're different here, they're the same here. Yeah. What do you think it is?
Well, first of all, it shows you that there are a lot of different ways
to
get to the same result.
Yep.
You have to coach to your personality. Coach Altman's personality, I mean, you know all the phrases.
Okay.
Bend your knees, no style points, come on, fellas, 10 up, 10 down. But Dana had a way of teaching, and the players knew he was all in. And I think that's what's maybe the most important aspect of a coach, because coaches ask players to be uncomfortable every day. And it sounds like an oxymoron, but to be comfortable being uncomfortable. Could you go to practice and the good coaches say this, what are we going to do individually today? And what are we going to do as a team to be better than we were yesterday? That's why we're practicing, boys. Okay,
yep.
What are we doing today to be better? You need to be uncomfortable in order to be better. But 18 to 21-year-olds cut through the crap pretty quickly, and you can ask that of them. But if you're not asking that of yourself, then there's going to be a disconnect.
Right.
Players always knew Dana was all in.
Yes.
Players always knew Mac was all in. That's what they had in common. They were great teachers. The individual was important. And they knew that they were not asking, and players knew they were not asking anything of you that they didn't ask of themselves.
Totally.
But also in today's age, and another thing with Coach Mack is, and we're finding it out right now, in order for us to be successful, we've got to have people buy into the program. And for your fans to buy into the program, to put 17,000 people in the building, to raise $15 million a year in donations, there has to be a connection between the coach and those people.
Right.
And Mac is great.
He's unbelievable.
In the community. He is unbelievable in terms of relationships. Everybody's important. He thinks more about them than him. Dana was more private. He was more of a hermit personality-wise.
Yep.
But he also was very focused. And it wasn't, I gave it my best shot. It was, fellas, we'll find a way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that was where, that was maybe his biggest strength was, we'll find a way.
Yes.
Hey, guys, quick break to talk to you guys about Pella Windows and Doors. You know, putting in a new door, new set of windows, it's really exciting, but let's be honest, it can be a little intimidating because sometimes you don't even know where to begin. Well, let me help you out. First of all, you got to go with Pella, duh. And with Pella, there are a couple of directions you can go to start. Number one, you can schedule a free in-home consultation. That's right, free. You'll get a Pella expert to come out, sit down with you, look at your home, and then they're going to be able to get a Greg McDermott-esque game plan for you that fits your budget, your wants, and your needs. That's one direction. Or, number two, you can head out to the showroom. Showroom's fantastic, man. It's really cool. Sometimes it really helps to actually see the window and see the door and you know, open it and close it. You get a much better understanding and feel of exactly what you're going to be putting into your home. So the showroom is also a great place to start as well. Bottom line, any direction you start with, just know that Pella has a variety of products and can 100% provide window and door solutions to any home. And you're going to be working with great people the entire time. Give Pella a call. 402-493-1350. That's 493-1350. Check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. Back to my conversation with Creighton Athletic Director Bruce Rasmussen.
Max, one of Max's greatest strengths is his relationship with people. He's the best relationship person. I've learned a lot from Coach Mack about that, and I learned a lot from Dana in terms of, don't tell me you gave your best effort. Find a way.
Right, yes.
And so while they've had similar success, and while they're different, they're alike in some ways,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I think both guys are, one of the things that jumps out at me, they're both extremely authentic in who they are. There's no phoniness. There's no, you know, that's why Dana can, you know, he can appeal to Dane Watts, Warrensburg, Missouri. Yeah. He can appeal to DeAnthony Bowden and everybody in between. Yeah. And then Coach McDermott is very authentic. The other thing, too, with them, too, is, and this kind of goes hand in hand, I think they're both really, really good talent evaluators.
Yes.
And I think that starts with they know exactly what they want to do and who can do that.
Yep.
I think that's one of the more underrated things with both guys is they are really good at spotting who talent and who they like.
And their definition of talent.
Yeah.
Because it isn't just how fast do you run, how high do you jump, you know. It is what do we need in order to be successful, and we need this particular skill set and this particular attitude. Bobby Knight said that his definition of talent was those people that found out what they needed to do, and they did it that way all the time. Yeah. He said, those are the most talented people. But both of them, too, are tremendous loyalty people, that they have a great loyalty and trust of you. And even when you mess up, there's a loyalty. They'll let you know you mess up. But there's also a loyalty to say, basketball's a game of mistakes.
Sure.
Okay, players make mistakes, coaches make mistakes, officials make mistakes. Let's learn from these mistakes. Let's not repeat these mistakes.
Sure. Do you think, or what, because we got a couple of questions asking us about, you know, best, greatest Creighton basketball game, most memorable Creighton basketball game. Is there one that when you sit back and think that, that stands out above the rest? I mean, we might have had one just a couple weeks ago that could end up being at the top, the Seton Hall game. But.
See, I don't get into that as much because, you know, you time. I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday. So, you know, sometimes you forget the experience you had in, like, year one or my first year at Creighton, 1980-81, was Tom Apke's last year. And, I mean, that was a very good basketball team. And then, you know, you go through the years and you think about, I mean, obviously the Seton Hall game was a very emotional, very high intensity, very well-played game against a potential Final Four team. It wasn't just that we won that game to get a share of the Big East Championship. It was we beat a team that really could very easily have been to the Final Four.
Absolutely.
And we played well and we dominated them. It was at home. There was emotions. I remember the first Big East game we played against Marquette on a New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
But you think back to, we had a bracket buster game that was like at 11 o'clock at night. The attitude was unbelievable. So I don't like to compare those.
Sure, they're all different in their own.
But yeah, it just, what not being able to have games causes you to do is to reflect on how fortunate I've been in my position to have really a front row seat to college basketball,
right,
and so many great games and so many great young men and coaches over the years.
You know, you bring up the word coaches. Coach Gibbs, yeah, is now coaching for the Oklahoma City Thunder G League team. Yeah. I can't wait to see where he ends up going as a coach, because you saw it, and we've talked like he had a basketball mind that was different.
Yep.
And it showed up in how he's played. And like, he's a guy that I think in a couple of years, whether he stays in the NBA or goes back to college and coaches, I just think the future is really bright for that guy.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because we talk a lot about vision, you know, and there's a difference between look and see.
Yeah.
Okay. Everybody looks out and they're looking at the same thing, but people see it differently.
Yeah.
And Grant saw the game frame by frame, but he saw things that are not observed by other people on the floor. Yes. And so, you know, like, I remember as a coach, when we'd stop practice and you'd say, you're supposed to be here, not here. And the players would go, no, I was where I was supposed to be. Well, you stop. Film doesn't lie.
Yeah.
Okay, but you go back and you watch some of the plays that Grant made and you watch him in practice, and he saw things that others didn't see. And you'd go back and look at film and go, how did he see that? You know, he threw Doug open, if that's the right phrase to use. You know, some people will throw you the ball if you're open.
Right.
And he not only threw it to you, the right person, when they were open, he threw you open.
Sure.
He knew where, how, and when to throw Doug the ball.
Right.
And he got it to him in the right spot. You know, passers today, passing's an underrated skill.
Oh.
But people are neighborhood passers. Well, I threw it to you. Well, if you're a three-point shooter and you're open and you catch it down here, your shooting percentage is not going to be the same as if you catch it in the shooting pocket.
Right.
Grant was an unbelievable passer, not just because he threw the ball in the right place, but he knew when, where, and how to throw the ball.
Yes.
And he made all five kids better. And he's got that. If you have that vision as a player, you have that vision as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to understand, passing to me is about instincts, and then the understanding of, if I do this, this happens to the defense. You know, like, and he knew that really well.
Yeah.
If I take it down here and look here, that's going to draw this defender, so I can throw it opposite. And so you have to be almost playing chess, to steal that analogy.
Yeah.
And he did that at such a high level. It was just, we were talking before, I stumbled upon the Creighton, Nebraska game, Doug McDermott's senior year, Gibbs' senior year, and I'm watching him play. And of course, Doug's making all these crazy shots and these fadeaways.
Yeah.
But I found myself just blown away at Gibbs, and the manipulation of the defense to get guys open is amazing.
He's a Tom Brady.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you look at what Brady does, and they talk about that. That was Grant Gibbs. And he also had the ability to know that the situation of the game dictated what he was going to do. So, obviously, Doug's an All-American. He could have passed it to Doug every single time down the floor.
Sure.
But he distributed the ball well and made everybody a part of it. But when the game was on the line, it's like, you know, you're in a war now. I'm firing the cannon.
No question.
We're not shooting the water pistol.
Right.
I'm going to the cannon. And but he just had that instinct of knowing that the situation in the game, the timing of the game, I'm not just throwing the ball to Doug. I'm throwing it to everybody. But in certain situations, it's only going to Doug.
It's only getting to him. Because he knew, the other thing too with why I think he's going to be a good coach is, he's not the first guy that has that kind of passing instincts, but a lot of people can't explain it.
Yes.
He's also a really good communicator.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be able to tell a point guard why and see this, you know. So I think he's going to be really good. Do you remember I just think it's always, you can never talk about Doug enough. Do you remember a game that you walked away going, oh boy, this guy might be not just kind of good. This guy might be like all-time elite. Was there any game that stood out to you that you walked away going, oh, yeah, man.
And it's a game that a lot of people didn't see. We were playing at Missouri State. And he got going. And I think, was Lusk coaching at Missouri State at that time?
Was he not? Konzo Martin. Okay. It was Konzo Martin.
But, I mean, Doug is hitting step back, fall aways, falling out of bounds on the baseline, and they're going in. And when he finally missed a shot, he got a standing ovation from the Missouri State fans.
Yeah, I remember that game. It was, for me, there was a snowstorm in Peoria. And something happened where Creighton they either got snowed in or whatever, but Creighton's playing Bradley. And he had 44 as a sophomore. And he was 18 of 23 or 18 of 21. And one miss was a late shot clock, had to just heave one up. Yeah. And one was he missed a layup and then got the rebound and put it back in. So basically he scored 44 points. And for all intents and purposes, didn't miss a shot. And I'll never forget. The official Kip Kissinger was repping the game. And I'm doing the radio. And after Doug hit one of his, you know, early on in his career, he was more of a back to the basket guy. Then he hit one of his, you know, almost like he never even looked at the basket, but the ball touched his hands and he flips it up to get him like 40. And Kip kind of trots by me, takes his whistle out of his mouth, and he goes,
yeah,
he said, wow. And you know, those officials, they kind of, they see a million games or on the next one. But for him to go in the moment, this is special. I will never forget that one.
And he was an anomaly in a lot of ways, too, because so many of your better scorers have to dominate the ball. Yeah. The ball has to be in their hands so much. You know, they shake and bake. But Doug didn't have the ball that much.
No.
He wasn't necessarily a volume shooter, and he certainly didn't dominate the ball in terms of having it and dribbling it and taking time. The number of points he scored for how few of seconds he had the ball in a game was amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure there are numerous games where he took under 20 dribbles, 15 dribbles, whatever it would be. I mean, he didn't need to pound it and massage it and all that stuff. He could catch, finish, and moved at an incredible clip off the ball.
Yep.
It was amazing. So we were supposed to ask him these questions on the piece of paper. What are we, is there anything we want to Tom wanted to know who the toughest player I ever had to guard. You know who the toughest player I ever had to guard was? Nate Funk every day in practice.
Oh boy.
That's a guy that we probably don't talk about enough too. He's one of the dudes that I think gets, you know, because Tolliver is my roommate and I love the guy, but like he gets talked about more because Anthony's now gone on to the NBA. Yeah. But Nate Funk was absolutely incredible.
And you talk about one of the special games at Wichita State. Wichita State was a top 10 team. We go down there, the place, and you've been there, it's noisy, it's off the charts. I'm talking to their AD before the game, and he basically said, you guys are playing pretty well. I think there's a chance you guys can keep it close today. That's what he said before the game. They had the defensive player of the year. I can't remember his name, but a dude that was about 6'6".
I know what you're talking about.
Jamar Howard.
Yeah.
And Nate Funk just ripped him. I think he had 42 or something. Nate was maybe as good a pure shooter as we've ever had. And you talk about Kyle. Now, Kyle shot with range, but Nate Funk could stop and pop. He could get to the middle of the lane, and he was athletic enough. He could get up over people, but he was such a pure shooter.
Oh, his mid-range.
Hard to guard.
It's really hard to stop. If someone can go hard 1-2 dribbles and stop, and he could, he could hit a little. Yep. Doug had it in him too, but he was impossible.
Yep.
There are a few guys you guard. And this is coming from a guy that was a below-average defender, as Nate Altman was. You're hoping they miss. Like, they're probably going to get to where they want to get to, and you're just going to contest and hope that they miss. Nate was one of those guys.
Yeah.
He was incredible.
Yeah, I think you're underselling your defensive
ability. Am I underselling?
Yeah. I know Coach Altman used to say, Nick Baugh, no D in his name, no D in his game.
You know why we had to do? We had to run a lot of matchup zone because I could talk. I could tell you, hey, get that guy, hey, get that. So I could do that. But yeah, Coach Altman always. I was horrible at taking charges. I didn't have instincts for it. And the number one thing Coach would get on me about in film and all this. He would bring me in and show me a play. Yeah. You got to slide over and take a charge, Bond. Just would kill me anytime I tried to take a charge. Even if I didn't get it, he was elated. Yeah.
But going back to Nate, Nate's a kid that I think could have played in the NBA for a long time had he had the desire to do so.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure he had that desire that it's number one amongst everything.
Right. And you know what? He went overseas and was having a really good career.
Yeah.
But I remember talking to Nate and I think he said he would be on Facebook and he would see pictures of his friends tailgating at a football game or doing this. And he'd go, I want to be doing that, you know, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But he was a guy that, to me, could have easily stuck in the NBA if he'd gotten the opportunity and really gone all in on it.
Let me ask you a question. You've been asking me a lot of them, but you're a rising star in the basketball broadcasting business is really an understatement because it would assume that you're not there yet. And while there's more to accomplish, you're really looked at as one of the better basketball analysts in the country.
Yeah.
And I think it's because you can explain the game. You don't just say this is what's happening, but you have an ability to explain why it's happening. But what have you found to be the biggest challenges in your new career in terms of broadcasting the game?
Yeah, you know, I appreciate you saying that. And what's funny about that is and maybe this is probably good, is to some people would feel like, oh, Nick made it. I don't feel like I've made it, you know, and maybe that's good. So you keep on wanting to attack it. I think the thing that I think back to all the film sessions with Bill Self at Kansas and Dana Altman, and those film sessions are gold because they're explaining not just who and what, but why this is happening. And sometimes I will go back and watch games, and there are times where like Mitch Ballack will make like a 27-foot crazy tough shot, and my comment will be Kelvin Jones set an incredible screen that free and and I'm like, you know what, sometimes Nick, you need to give some credit to the guy that just made the 27 fadeaway. But I think the challenges are making sure that you are always giving each individual player and understanding their story as good as you possibly can. Because I think you have to remember that these games mean a lot to these players.
Yes.
And you owe it to them to know their story, to know what makes them tick, understand how their season's gone, and tell their story. I had Jay Billis on my podcast, and I told Jay this story. So you remember College Game Day did Creighton Southern Illinois my senior year. It was the worst game.
I was there.
Yeah, it was. I made a three with about 11 minutes left, and we didn't have another field goal until the last possession of the game. So ratings were not high for that College Game Day game. But I'll never forget, Jay Billis made a comment during the game that Nick Baugh may not be Creighton's most talented player, but he is arguably the most important player.
Yeah.
And that meant a ton to me. Now think about a Jay Billis calls, you know, 40, 50 games a year. This is one player in a random game at Creighton. And I am 13 years later and I remember that. So I try to make sure that that's something. Like, you got to know the players. It means a lot to them and know their stories.
Well, there's an enthusiasm to what you do. And what I appreciate is what you just touched on is that you are positively explaining what's going on in the game. And the announcers that rubbed me wrong, this is a former player and a former coach, are that, well, that was a horrible play by him. What was he thinking? And basketball's a game of mistakes.
Yeah.
But there's so many. Again, it's a lot of times the people not in the spotlight. We talk about the faithfulness, the loyalty, the dedication, the great screen, the great pass, the great vision. But there's also an enthusiasm to it. But I remember that game at Southern because also their fans were there early and their student chants were pretty good. But as bad as the game was, Aaron Andrews was there.
Oh, God. Yeah. Yes. I know where this is going. You want me to tell the story?
No, you can go ahead and tell it.
Okay. So for people that don't know, I don't know how that, maybe you could explain, some of the Creighton basketball players would get like a 2-week internship with the College World Series.
Yes.
And ESPN. I don't know. I mean, just because probably Creighton was involved or whatever.
We were the host school.
The host school. So basically for 2 weeks, me and Pierce Hibma and maybe a handful, Aaron Brandt did it 1 year with us. Jimmy Motes did it like every year. And, you know, you go for 2 weeks and you're there all day and, you know, you're running cable, you're doing this. One of my jobs was to clean the bases in between the games, you know. And it did give you an appreciation of all that goes into a broadcast from behind the scenes. But anyways, so Aaron Andrews was a sideline reporter for ESPN doing the College World Series. And I was a budding broadcaster, and I thought I need to approach Aaron Andrews and try to get contact information, you know, whatever. I'm trying to network here, Rass. Help, you know, if that's what you call it.
And call it what you want.
Call it what you want. It's networking, all right? So I approached her during lunch one day, and I, you know, explained, "Hey, my name's Nick Baugh. I want to be a broadcaster. I'd love to be able to, you know, pick your brain, whatever." And so I get like her email address, and I think it was like fakeemail@gmail.com. You know, like, do not email. But anyway, so then here it is a year later, game day is doing Creighton Southern Illinois, and I knew Aaron Andrews was going to be there, and I thought, I wonder if she's going to remember me. And, you know, Coach Altman tells the story. I don't know if this is true or not, but I got up and showered before shoot around, had my hair done and all this stuff, you know. And so we're shooting around at, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, whatever, at Carbondale Arena. And we're shooting, and Jay Billis is there, and Dan Shulman's there, and I'm kind of just looking around the gym, looking for, okay, when's Aaron going to come? And then all of a sudden the doors open and Aaron Andrews walks in and I see her and I'm like, okay, here we go. Is she going to remember me? And her eyes kind of lit up and she goes, Nick. And I turn and look at her and I go, hey, Aaron. Right as that happens, Booker Woodfox fires a chest pass that hits me just dead square in the nose. Almost knocks me over. I got tears coming down my eyes. And all of a sudden, oh, are you okay? It knocked all the cool out of me in that moment. And to this day, and I mean this, that was the hardest I've ever seen Dana Altman look. You know, he was, I mean, on a game day. It is game day. That guy is
and
usually
it's Southern Illinois.
Tight. And it's Southern Illinois. He was sitting on the scorer's table. And Coach Altman, like, fell off the scorer's table, was dying. But, yeah, that was That was not a good moment for me. Right
that's
there.
Where I was going. I was sitting next to Dana when that happened. I'll tell you a quick Aaron Andrews story, College World Series.
Yep.
I sat at lunch. I went to lunch with Aaron Andrews and Jim Hendry, just the three of us. An hour later, my magnetic personality, she couldn't have picked me out of a lineup. It was her and Jim.
You might as well have been a waiter.
I could have been a waiter bringing butter.
I don't believe that for a second. Jim's got such a big personality that he's going to own any table that he's at. That's funny. That is. So you're not. So what's? Do you get? Do you even watch Netflix, Rass? Do you even watch any shows? You seem like a guy that is like watching a basketball game, watching a baseball, like your sports or work, like what are you going to do
you
now?
Know, and you develop habits. There are about two or three TV shows I watch. But the younger generation, you know, my kids have Netflix. They have Hulu. They binge watch a show or a series. They don't see the commercials or anything.
Sure.
Just binge watch them. I'm not a big TV guy.
Right.
Unless it's especially basketball. But there are a few shows I watch. And lately we've been watching a movie a night.
Yeah.
But again, it shows the nerdiness in me because I wanted to watch some of the movies that I'd never seen that were very highly rated movies.
Yes.
So, a couple nights ago, we watched Pulp Fiction.
Yep.
Highly rated.
Yeah, just somehow slipped through the cracks, never seen it.
I watched the first half hour of that and shut it off. I'm going, I can't watch any more of this. This is
stupid.
This is awful. Yeah. So I would not make a good film critic. Yeah. No.
I was thinking about old classic movies. Do you think the guys on the basketball team now have all seen Hoosiers?
Or
do you think it's like, like that was a huge, was the basketball movie.
You know, I don't know.
I doubt it.
And I saw that survey the other day where they asked coaches, and you may have seen it, your favorite TV show and your favorite movie. And I saw Shawshank a lot.
Yeah.
And it's a great movie. But a movie along the same lines that precedes that hardly a lot of people haven't watched is Papillon.
Okay. I haven't seen
that. With Steve McQueen and Dustin Hoffman. It's a prison movie.
Okay.
A lot of the same thoughts process.
Right.
Shawshank is a copy of Papillon.
Okay.
So if you want to watch a movie,
there we go.
Get on, watch Papillon.
There we go. I need to do that. I need to
You know, when I first came to Omaha, I called Papillion Papillon.
I saw that Coach Altman in that story said that he watches Seinfeld.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call BS on that. Yeah. I don't think Dana Altman ever watched Seinfeld.
Yeah, that's a good. But he had to give one.
You got to give an answer, right? Basketball film is not a TV show. Well, Raz, this was great, man. This was fun. It was fun to catch up. You know, obviously, to the Creighton fans out there, you know, we're gonna get through all this together. I mean, this is just a tumultuous, unprecedented, trying time for everyone. And it's going to be a tough couple of months here, but I'm confident we'll get through it.
Well, I do too, and this is a nice diversion from what both of us have to do. But I sent out to my staff a few days ago the Jim Valvano speech, you know, and where he says every day you need to do these three things: you need to think, need to laugh, and you need to be moved to tears.
Yeah.
If you do all three of those things each day, then that's a pretty full day.
It is.
And when you think about what's going on now, I mean, there's so many things that are happening right now that move you to tears. There's so many things that are happening today that cause you to think and maybe think differently. But we also have to have that laughter as a part of it.
And absolutely.
So hopefully, one of the things that this accomplished was maybe people got a laugh or two out of it.
Amen. I'm excited because I've had to become Mava's preschool teacher. So I got out of preschool today to come laugh with you. So thank you, Rev. I appreciate it, all right?
Great. Thank you, Nick.
You got it.
All right, my thanks to Pella Windows and Doors. If you're thinking about a new window or a new front door, now is the perfect time. Give Pella a call at 402-493-1350 or check them out online at PellaOmaha.com. We will see you next time on the Nick Bob Podcast.
Production.